Triple M Football is the number one football call on radio.
Footy's on the radio.
And your front row.
For the Fiat Ducato, the most powerful front-wheel drive van in its class.
Welcome to the Saturday Rub.
For McDonald's fan feed boxes.
Triple M rocks football.
Triple M footy at the MCG. Essendon play Geelong here, of course. A rare matchup at this ground. Normally, both clubs, when they play in Melbourne, would head to Etihad Stadium, but they're at the G today, and we're looking forward to it enormously with the best team in the business, Brian Taylor, in ripping form, as is Damien Barrett, as is Danny Frawley, and we've got some big names coming up. Trent Cotchin not far away. Looking forward to chatting to the captain of the Tigers, and as we drift through, I can see just on the old running sheet here that bristle and bomb, those two words have just joined together, so ouch! I know Spud wants a piece of... Well, a publication and a journalist
Later on.
Yeah, anyway, well, we'll get to that a little later on as well. And plenty to discuss, including last night's game, which was not good if you're a fan of the Richmond Footy Club.
Good afternoon, guys. And, of course, it's Country Day. She just put that on the map, so...
It could work, Spud.
I'm not sure whether... Look, it's great outside. We've got all the farmers' markets, the spuds, the steaks, the chops out there, JB. So, she just... Look, it'll...
What about Bill Brownless during the week just pointing out that Sheeds came from Paran and spent a minute in the country?
Yeah, that's true.
What the hell does he know about?
That's a good point.
But he is an innovator in footy.
Yeah, look, I spent the day with him yesterday and Bill was there at that particular day and did mention that to Sheeds, actually, and Sheeds didn't really have an answer for that at that particular time. But it is a concept, and look, I know Sheeds is full of these concepts and that sort of thing. He's got Anzac Day up, Dreamtime up.
Yeah.
I think this wallet may not be a huge thing this year. In 3 years' time, it could be like the Royal Show outside of the ground.
Yeah.
And that could be absolutely fantastic. Imagine the O'Toole's flying them over from Tassie on the wood chop out there, Spud. The whole thing, a bit of whipping going on.
And I'd like to get a couple of the old man's Angus bulls and walk them around, the prize bulls as you do at the show, and a couple of your steeds out there, Brian.
What's that?
A bit of a horse jumping.
What's happening to you, Boots? You've bought into this. Normally you are the greatest skeptic when it comes to such matters. You're obviously getting an earn out of this day somehow, aren't
farmer.
You?
He had an urn out of it yesterday.
There you go. Yeah. I knew something was up.
No. He had a bit of an urn yesterday.
Look at him.
There was nothing out of this yesterday. Yeah.
Normally not a bullion when these new things come in.
Hates themed rounds is the last time I heard you talk about such topics.
I hate all the, let's have left-wing activists round and let's have, Brunswick Street round and, support the orange people and all this sort of thing.
Well, the Eureka Stock Aid game didn't work for Sheeds.
No,
that
didn't.
Was one that he wanted
because
to get going.
Because no one knows about that. I mean, they don't teach Australian history in school anymore. But everyone can relate. And I actually drove, I did my bit today. Yeah. I drove a farmer to the ground today. His name was Pete. I picked him up out in the highway somewhere and drove him here to the ground today. He's been carving down 1,000 Angus cows.
What a random. Yeah. Just
and
a
he's
random.
Come, he, this is his only game of footy this year, and he's come because it's country round.
Yeah, I've got, three groups of guys, similar age to myself, all coming down, staying for the weekend. They're one of them have got a stall out there.
So you look out tonight.
Yeah, I won't be going with them because they get the sniff, Brian, of the city here, a few of the country lads there. They're staying over the road here at the Hilton, so I'd suggest after about 10 o'clock, stay away from the Hilton.
Anyone with a flannelette shirt, a pair of RMs on and a pair of denims on,
and
stay
the
away.
Yeah, stay away.
I'd suggest Sheeds is about as country as me, Bristol.
Yeah, no.
That's what I'd suggest.
Actually, you can't relate to the country at all, JB.
No, even when I've had properties in there, I haven't related to it. Brian, it's just not something
not
that
much
I can
country in you,
quite get my head around.
I've got a bit of news today.
Yeah. I know, I'm looking forward to it.
Should I hang on to it?
Brian, I know he's ready for it.
When he's got the arms folded like that, he's got
language.
A bomb. He's just so excited to get it out.
Hey, we need to talk about Richmond last night. Damo, we did the rub last night, and somehow in my own mind, mainly because I thought the two big defenders were coming out for the West Coast, and when they didn't, I sort of swung back their way. But I thought, Richmond have won their last three over there. They've had a horrible week. They're going to have got on a plane. They may be able to just garner something out of all of that and provide the West Coast with a ferocious opponent. But after the first goal, you watch the next 7 minutes of footy and you realise that it was just a matter of how far they were going to lose by. It looked 150 points at one stage.
Yeah, and Luke Darcy was equally buoyant in his thoughts about the prospects, wasn't he, as you were last night, without committing to picking the Tigers,
but thought it could be a chance.
Yeah. But, Jim, we've now got four games in. We know that they fortunately won that first game against Carlton, lost the unlosable against Collingwood when they were 3 goals up with 6 minutes to play. We're okay against Adelaide, but at the same time still got done quite easily in the end. And last night, while it was against last year's grand finalist, it was as bad a performance as they could possibly hope to have had.
So there's a pattern there.
There's a pattern there now. It's four games now, BT, and we talk about bodies of work, don't we? Four's starting to become enough. It's on the back of not getting the job done in the previous three seasons in terms of it actually mattering when it comes to the crunch of an elimination final. We've had the narrative around the coach, we've had the narrative around the leadership of the club, and it is not heading the right way, and this is going to be yet another long week in the history of the Richmond Football Club.
This is 2 weeks in a row. Adelaide put them to the sword, and West Coast last night. Since Champion Data have put out their stats in 1999, that was the worst half, as I said, getting the ball inside forward 50. Richmond got it in eight times.
Since 1999
since
was the worst number.
Since 1999, since Champion Data.
What was it? How many? Inside 50s?
Eight inside 50s. The second worst ever, Brian. Wow. And the worst was obviously five from Brisbane versus Fremantle round 14, 2014. So we're talking about one of the worst halves of football in the last 15, 16 years.
It's clear to me, can compete against the bottom six sides in the competition and go either way. Any of the top sides, the top five or six sides, it looks to me like they can't compete against.
Now, so that's where they're at.
So that means that they are going backwards. They have not, you know, been waiting and waiting. I've been holding my breath to think, gee, have Richmond improved? I reckon I can say pretty safely now that Richmond are on the decline, not on the improve.
But some clubs go into a year with that, and you're big on this, Jim, aren't you? You look at 4 or 5 years down the track, and some you just know some year's coming, and it's going to be a year where you take a step back. Damien Hardwick mentioned that. I believe out of the blue, in terms of the narrative around this club, last week after the Adelaide game, that we may have to take a half step back. They weren't planning to take that half step back, by the way they prepared for 2016. So that's come as a shock to them, I would say.
They wouldn't have done. No, because what Damien and Richmond tried to do, and you never begrudge one trying to win. He backed it on the Hawthorn model. They were 10th on the ladder back in 2012-11. They recruited guys like Chaplin, Marich, Grigg, Hooley, Taylor Hunt and Yaron. Now, Yaron hasn't played, but the other guys got them from 10th to 8th to 7th, but then there's no improvement in those players now. So they've actually taken up a lot of lists and games in youngsters, and they've relied on them to get to a certain level, and they're too reliant on their best six players.
So what you're saying is, if you're a top side like Hawthorn, you can afford to do that. But if you're a side that's still trying to go up, then you've got to be real careful.
You've got to be careful, Brian, because Hawthorn could afford to get Brian Lake. Yeah. No one else wanted Brian Lake, but they can afford to take that risk because they're already up there.
Yeah.
Richmond tried to climb up and get them in, and that they got in the finals, but the facts are, the last 3 years, they've perform miserably in their first final.
Yeah, they have.
They're too reliant on their best six players. Rance.
Good last night.
Cochin and Riewoldt.
Good last night.
They were all good. Then throw in Martin and Ellis. Now, Martin really form dropped off for a whole range of reasons, probably family reasons.
They've got Port, Hawthorn, Sydney and Fremantle in Perth, Melbourne next week, I know. But those five, it ain't getting any easier for them over the next 5 weeks. In fact, I can't see them winning more than one of those games.
No. And throw in Ellis, whose form's been down on the last couple of years, and Deledio hasn't played. So too reliant on six players. The guys that have come in, sort of a McIntosh, a Lloyd, Vickery, Hampson's another one. So there's a big question mark on that. Reg Hickey is a very good doctor at Richmond, but I'm led to believe he went in with a minor corky against one of the best jumping ruckmen the game has ever seen.
And he finished with a major one.
Well, he finished with a lot. And he was limping well in the start of the game, really. And be interested to see what Trent Cochin says about that later on. But my mail is that he went in with a bit of a corky. And if you're playing against Nat Nui, it's not a matter of if. It's when he gets hit on that thigh.
But could they have risked playing Marich, who, you know, hasn't played a game this year? Yes, he was named as an emergency. And, you know, would he have supported? Would he have given them anything on the big oval in his first game back? Probably
and
not.
And Vickery's just... Look, he has now been around long enough, hasn't he, BT, to now for us to say that he just doesn't quite cut it when it comes to him being the player they wanted him to be.
Well, this is about his sixth or seventh year, I reckon. Yeah. He's got to be doing it by then.
Yeah, and look, there's one player... And I don't like picking out players, but Troy Chaplin's been a very, very good player. Now, this gets back to coaching a little bit. He starts in the forward line.
Why?
Well, they can't find a spot for him down back, Brian, because he gets hit up too often.
Right.
You don't put a guy who's aging in
gone
a forward
in the back line.
Yeah, gone in the back line. The forward line, you need speed. You look at Hawthorn. Their forward line is quick. North Melbourne, they've got speedsters around. St Kilda are light years of playing the finals, but what they've got in their forward line is speed. You know, Weller and Loney.
It's bleak, JB. I sat there with my youngest yep. boy last night. He's a Richmond man. And at halftime, I said, mate, it's all over for your club this year. They're now going to have to win 8 or 9, do something exceptional, 8 or 9 in a row just to get themselves back in the hunt.
Well, I mainly watched the back half. I saw bits and pieces of the first half, and then I saw all of the back half. The worrying thing, Bruce, well, for me, if I was attached to the Richmond Footy Club, is I actually thought they had a dig. Yeah. So I didn't think it was an effort thing necessarily.
Second half was better. Though,
second, so I didn't see enough of the
first half was terrible.
But the second half they were blown away as well. So I'm thinking to myself, as if you're attached to that club, you're thinking we're actually having a crack and we're nowhere near it, and that worries you.
Yeah, I sat there and watched. You know what I thought? I thought actually that I'm not sure whether the players are believing.
And that could well be the case. I mean, look at the numbers. They're 23 down contested, which is a bashing. They cough up 20 marks inside 50, which is a ridiculously high number. Mm. As Spud said, 60 inside 20, inside 50s to 27. Not surprising, though, Spud, that the four lowest are all at Subiaco Oval. It's a unique ground. It's skinny and long, and all of those four low insides are all at the same ground. And West Coast play a territory style of footy. They just get it forward, and then they crush down, and you just cannot get the thing out of there. They had a similar game last year against Geelong, I don't know if you remember, Brian, where the Cats could not get the ball out of their back half for the whole game. And they're a very good club and a very well-coached club. So you got to cut Richmond some slack in that. West Coast are an extraordinarily good opponent at home.
I'll cut them some slack, but last week, Don Pike coached Adelaide, who was at West Coast for 2 or 3 years, did the same thing. And let's face it, the scoreboard flattered Richmond, 18 goals, 17. Hmm. They missed, and Yo was one of their better players, they missed goals. That to me, that scoreboard flattered Richmond. That's a 20-goal defeat. Yeah.
And at halftime, and it was 10-13, that could have very easily been 16-7 or 17-6.
And Adelaide ran Richmond off their feet last week. It's a real speed issue. They've got some guys in there that are brave, and if they don't win the ball, and I'm talking about guys like Lloyd, Taylor Hunt, McIntosh. Dustin Martin's a very good player, but not quick of leg. Very quick decision maker and a very good player. But they've got some guys there that the modern game, you only have to have a look at Y sides, even Melbourne, down the bottom of the ladder, they're looking forward and they're taking the game on forward. Richmond is still plateauing out wide. You know why? They haven't got the legs to get through the extra number. So they're going out wide. So
is that similar to what Collingwood is suffering from as well?
A little bit. Now, yes, you're right. The leg speed issue last week, but that was, the funny thing about the Collingwood St Kilda game, St Kilda played really well. No one mentioned that. They did run them off their legs. I know that West Coast got the ball in, but you can't have two less possessions, in my opinion. This gets back to coaching. You'd only have 27 inside 50s.
That's horrific, 27 inside 50s.
West Coast had two more possessions, Brian. Get it in 60 times. Mm. They're now one of the most efficient teams in the competition, and I do agree with you, JB. They play that ground better than most. And if you win the clearance and get it in, they swarm that in because it's long, but it's not wide. So they just press Richmond in, and it gets back to ball use.
So consider this. 1-3 at the moment. They play Melbourne next week. They're a chance to win Melbourne because they're probably similar.
Two right, though.
So all of a sudden, they're 2-3. Are we going to think any differently of them next week?
We won't know anymore. I don't think you can judge a game against Melbourne as being a turning point for where they're going to be at. But it will be in that stretch of matches you referred to before.
I'll tell you the other thing, Damo, that you know with me, and we've always done this with Triple M, actually, that we have very little focus on umpiring on this station.
Yep.
But, geez, they get looked after over there. 10-2 was at the 20-minute mark of the first quarter.
There were
10
a couple
to
that
2.
You wondered about.
And we've gone through it. We got Ash Shua 2 years ago, Bristol, probably before you came back to us, to go through it. And over the course of a sample, I think it was 2013 or 14, one of those seasons, they were paid West Coast 100 more free kicks than their opponents in their 11 home games. So it didn't matter in the end, but when the game was hot and early on, they just... a couple of them you just look at and go, why is it unique to this club and this ground that they just get such a nice, easy armchair ride?
No, they do, JB.
And then they squared them up later. It always happens.
It's all
ended
over.
Up getting, but when it mattered, 10 to 2 at the 15-minute mark, you're like, wow, it just keeps happening.
No, it does happen. And it always happens, even in finals over there, which is a real concern, as you're right. The second half, there's no doubt they have a look and try and even it up.
You're not intimating that they have WA umpires operating
No,
over
they don't.
No, they're not.
But they have a look at the stats, Brian. Right. They have a look at the stats at halftime, and the AFL umpire manager in the room says, look, it's 10-2, just even it up a little bit. But Alex Rance, and I don't want to single one guy, if he wasn't there last night, they get beat by 25 goals. Mm. That's one of the great defensive efforts you'll ever see. It won't get talked about, and I know I look at the pointy end, but Riewoldt was great. Rance was absolutely outstanding.
And Cotchin, I thought Cotchin guess next was very good too.
You know, on that thing on the umpiring, but just going back 10 seconds, you know they do talk to them at quarter time or in the middle.
I know that, Brian.
And at three-quarter time when they're standing in the middle, the guy up in the box, the umpire's advisor, is talking to the umpires out in the middle. I don't think that should be allowed. Hmm. I think those guys are susceptible to all sorts of things, and I just think we should take it out of their hands that you shouldn't. No one should be able to speak to the umpires. No one, except offering medical treatment to the umpires during the game.
Well, it'll be interesting to see who the new umpires manager is, because Wayne Campbell's left that role, gone to GWS.
That'll be Luke Ball.
Yeah, I would have thought so. He's doing a little bit of a traineeship there at the moment. He's a moral for that job.
Well, the interesting thing about it, Purple, is they bristle against it, West Coast. They hate the accusation. But when you do the numbers, 100 more. In a season.
And,
100 more
right?
frees.
Jim, are you also referring to a preliminary final last year? Maybe?
I'm talking 100 more frees over 11 games.
Ben Davis went over in the goal square and didn't get a free kick, Jim.
Between the opponent and the home team.
That's where it goes
where this
back
comes
to.
From.
Please.
We were doing the game last year.
Just a bit of something, Bristol. Just a little bit of something.
Jacobs free kick too that wasn't paid last year.
You're kidding yourselves, you blokes. Get that bomb ready, Bristol. Next we speak to...
I don't know whether I can.
BT, if it's right, it's a big one.
Trent Cotchin to join us next. Last night at Domain Stadium, the old Subiaco Oval between the Tigers and the West Coast Eagles. Not a great night for the Richmond Footy Club. In fact, not a great night on field. And then they got to the airport and were held up for a couple of hours there too. So it wasn't a good day for the skipper, who joins us now, Trent Cotchin on the line. Coach, welcome.
Thanks, guys.
Mate, just a day that never really got started for you. Kicked the first goal and looked like you got out of the blocks okay, but were really dominated from that moment on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, full credit to the way West Coast played, especially in that first half. Their pressure forced us to make those errors that, you know, we spoke about last week, really being the detriment to our game, and for whatever reason couldn't tidy that quick enough, and they dominated the game from then on.
Was it purely the fact of the lack of run out of the back half, Koch, or... The skill errors, because as you said, dominated inside 50s West Coast. I think you guys 8 or 9 in the first half. You just couldn't get it out of there.
Yeah, well, our midfield was really disappointed with our efforts in the first half. And typically at the Domain Stadium, if you're not winning the ball around the contest and it's spent a bit of time in your back half, you're going to be under pressure with scoreboard pressure. So, you know, take responsibility as a midfield group, but, you know, all over the ground we just didn't play exactly how we wanted to going into the game, so that's a disappointing thing from Boots' perspective.
Koch, just backing up what Spud just said then, it looked like you had a plan in the first 5 or 10 minutes of the game to really handball your way out of defence, because you look hell-bent on doing that, and then as the game went on, sort of the turnovers started to get you.
Yeah, I suppose it came out that way, and it was probably, you know, one of those ones where you don't want to refer pressure, but credit to West Coast, their pressure was great. We didn't really play the game that smartly, to be honest. But as I said, I mean, if you're not winning the ball at the first contest at clearance, it's pretty hard to give yourself an opportunity to score, especially when it's locked in their forward half.
Especially when your ruckman goes down early too, Koch. Did he go into the game with an injury cloud with a cork thigh?
No, I think he just received, I think it was a couple, maybe three, even corks in a very similar area. So just, you know, as a ruckman jumping in and competing hard against, you know, one of the best and most athletically gifted humans I've ever seen, it makes it challenging. And I think it just got to a point where it was too sore to even compete.
So what's the big...
for us and Hammer.
So what's the big picture now, Trent? You've got Melbourne, Port, Hawthorn, Sydney and Fremantle, another game in Perth on the end of that over the next 5 weeks. What are you thinking big picture right now?
Big picture. Well, the big picture doesn't eventuate if you don't do the little things well, and that's what we need to focus on, especially this week going into Melbourne, who obviously had a fantastic pre-season series. They've played some good footy throughout the first part of the year, so we just need to make sure that we prepare as well as we can and execute what we go into the game trying to set out to achieve.
Trent, the body of work is only four games old, but the one win that came was a fortunate one in some respects against Carlton in round one. We've now got enough matches to tack on to what's happened in previous years. Do you feel as though you are significantly off the mark?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, we aren't playing our best footy. I'm pretty sure we're aware of that as a group. But, you know, the challenge for us as a group is to execute, as I said. Our focus this week will be to execute the plan we go into. We feel as though the work we're doing pre-game and leading into games is we have the right answers. We're just not executing game day, and that's the challenge for our group. Whether it be our senior players, our younger guys, that's our job as leaders, is to make sure that they're as best prepared and have the right answers, but the next part is executing those.
It's obviously a long week and a longer week when you're a big club the way Richmond is critiqued by we on the outside. This is the second Saturday morning you wake up with a long week ahead of you in this already short part of 2016. How are you coping with that? I mean, if you were to look at your form, you're arguably leading the best and fairest, but I know that's not what you are about. How are you going to go with this week that lies ahead for Richmond and the questions that are coming to you and your coach and your club?
Oh, frustrated by the way people throw Dimmer under the bus, because the reality is that, as I've said, I feel as though our planning going into games is as good as it's ever been. We're well prepared, but at this stage, it's the playing group that are probably letting down the coaching staff at the moment with the way we're executing what we go into the game doing, whether that be basic skill errors, which was certainly the case last week and a little bit of it last night, but also just not playing the way we really want to. So that's a challenge for myself as a leader and our other leaders that are playing at the moment, as well as the guys that aren't. We need pressure from below, and we need to start to execute, because the reality is if you don't play good footy consistently and start winning games, then obviously pressure continues to mount. But for our younger guys, I mean, confidence is a really big thing. We need to instill that as best we can. Obviously, the best way to do that is win games of footy. So we'll go back to the drawing board, review the game Monday, make sure that as much as the week needs to be tough and challenging and we're getting something out of these losses that we don't want to have, we need to make sure that there's also an element of enjoyment there as well.
Hmm. When you say you get frustrated with people putting Dimmer under the bus, do you take some responsibility, not you personally, but as captain of a team that is not performing, clearly, and you're articulating this now, to the way you expect to be able to perform?
I'm not sure. Is that two questions in one?
Okay, when you say people are putting Dimmer under the bus, that is what we in the media, or some of us in the media, may well be doing, and that's what happens. But do you, as captain of your club, take responsibility for the players not delivering on what you're saying is a player issue more than a coach issue right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I have to.
Is it my job?
I see my job as the captain of the football club is to make all the players, whether that be at AFL or VFL level, better and as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
So the challenge for us is, how does that look? What does it look like? And how can we fast-track that progress?
And Trent, last week post-match, Damien Hardwick said that may require a half step to be taken backwards. Last night, the commentary was, it's a broken process. Do you see it that way as well?
I'm not sure what he means by a broken process. I haven't seen is that in the press conference?
Yeah, the process is broken.
I think, you know, you're talking about the process. That's probably what I'm talking about with execution of instruction. And we've got some guys really down on confidence. So how do we instill that? What does it look like? And how do we get guys back to playing confident Richmond footy at a consistent level? Because that's what's going to hold us in really good stead coming into the next month of footy.
Kotcher, I know you don't want to give your game plan, but you say play the Richmond way. What Can you just give us a couple of ideals on what you're trying to achieve out there? Because the last 2 weeks against Adelaide and West Coast, you found wanting in a range of areas. I understand the skill component, the turnovers, but what are you as a group and, more important, the coaching staff trying to do? Is it play on quick or get the ball inside forward 50? What's one of the couple of points you have to work on? And I know you say the Richmond way, but...
I'm obviously not going to talk too much about what we're trying to achieve as a team, but the most disappointing thing for us in last night's game in particular was, and whether it be as a midfield group or a team across the board, was, you know, you lose contested possession, clearance and tackle in the first half. You know, that's not what we want to be seen as a football club. Me as an individual and my teammates as well, you know, you want to be one of those teams that are in there winning the footy and giving you team a chance to score.
Cots, the tackle count interests me. We all saw you play out here last year against Hawthorn. I know it's a long time ago now in footy in terms, but it was a ferocious attack on the ball and the ball carrier that we saw from the Tigers that night that embarrassed the best team in the comp. I'm not sure we've seen it since. We certainly haven't seen it this year. I think your highest tackle count for the year is 60. You've lost the tackle count, I think, 3 of the 4 games you played this year. And that's the blue-collar sort of stuff that I reckon the Richmond fans are looking at going, well, where is that? Where's that manic attack on the footy? Where's that pressure and closing down? And the stuff that Richmond do really well when they're up and about. And that's a mindset thing, isn't it? That's a, you know, every player in the team picked on the day can tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't take a lot of talent or skill to execute a tackle. I mean, it's probably more a case of being there and laying a tackle, but teams are that good these days that they have an ability to fish it out. So you just need to make sure you stick in when you do have your opportunity. Again, yeah, you're right. It's an attitude thing, so the onus needs to be on the playing group for that one.
Hey, you sound pretty flat. Is it hard for you, boys?
Don't worry about that.
Yeah, no, you do, and I understand it. Is that symptomatic of the playing group? I mean, being stuck on the tarmac for 2 hours doesn't help, but you know, it sounds pretty flat.
Oh, I think any day after a game, it's hard to be too up and about or positive when you've lost. But you know, the sun came up this morning. We're still out now, which is a positive in life, but we just have some work to do, and we're well aware of that. We'll make sure that we're doing everything we can to turn the tide, and you know, for Richmond supporters, it's not the end of the world right now. We're game four into the season. It's a long season, and we'll do everything we can to turn it around.
Look, I don't want to harp on the game plan, Koch, but the facts are you had 340 disposals and had 27 inside 50s. West Coast had 342, two more disposals, yet they had 60 inside 50s. That's 33 more. Surely the run and carry that we see a lot of sides are doing and getting the ball in is just not there at the moment for the Tigers.
I would like to think that it was more about winning the ball at the contest. I mean, it's a skinny ground, so once it is in your forward half, we tried hard to execute getting it outside of their defensive half, but obviously being their home ground and doing it so well, they just had it in their half, which is probably why both teams had similar possession counts, but theirs were at the more important end.
Hey, Koch, thank you very much, mate. We know it's tough after a loss, especially interstate, and the hold-up you've had, so we appreciate you giving us some of your time.
No worries. Enjoy the call, boys.
Trent Koch in there, and as I say, flat.
That's very flat.
It was good to come on, though, Joe.
Very good to come on. We love, obviously, everyone giving us their time. But it just sounds, it's got a bunker feel about it.
If you were captain of Richmond, how would you have done that?
Yeah, I would have been a little bit more direct about the style of play. He didn't really have a lot of answers for mine. He couldn't answer the style of play. I think the question you asked, Warrior, is the big one for mine, the dimmer one. He was... been thrown under the bus, so that was interesting.
He was pretty open.
Yep. He just said the Richmond way. I want to know what that is, Brian. Is it taking the game on, or is it being really defensive?
A bit lost at the moment.
I'm not sure what they do.
What do you take out of a demo with your news antenna?
Yeah, just that, Jim. And look, people might say we're reading too much into what he has said. We're reading too much into only 4 games of a season, but it's tracking badly, Jim, isn't it? It's not as if we're having this conversation today for the first time this year. We had it last week after the Adelaide loss, which came after the Collingwood loss. there's enough evidence now to think that this club has made a decision to back in Damien Hardwick over the off-season, and that's fine, but they now need to go and sell why they did that, because it's not shaping the way. The first four matches beyond that re-signing have not gone the way that they felt it was going to, clearly. On the back of what Peggy O'Neill, the president of the club, said, was a thorough review. We asked ourselves the toughest of tough questions. Damien is the right man for us, she said, and right now it's not shaping that way.
Well, as Bristol said, they've got a big week coming up. They've got the Melbourne Footy Club, who are capable of playing very well on any given day. And if they,
look at
if they drop that one, crikey.
Look at Brian.
Look at the Bristol.
Look at the chest.
He's got a bomb ready to go.
No, look, it's not.
Settle down, Brian.
It's not big, JB.
I reckon it's big, because I've never seen him. JB, he was here at 11. 11 o'clock he was here.
And the body language tells me it's large.
This is big, Jim.
We need to speak to the CEO of the AFL, who's, I know, been waiting very happily and patiently on the line because we had to get Trent Koch in interview. Gil McLaughlin, welcome to you.
Has Rosie been dubbing on me?
Mate, yes. I just know that you're styling, and I know you would have been very happily chatting to Rosie and just waiting for us to get to you.
I know how important you guys are.
Thank you.
Everyone's happy to wait.
What happened in China? Was that one of the great smoke screens? Is there anything significant coming out of it, please?
Well, I reckon the multi-million-dollar deal that Port Adelaide have already done is evidence enough of something substantive, and I reckon it'll go. I think China's very important to this country, and I reckon it's huge opportunities for our game, and I think the deal that Port's done is evidence of that.
So is there definitely going to be a game, and if so, when?
Well, the issue with the game is venue. We've had guys up there in the last weeks looking at the Shanghai Stadium and other opportunities, so we get the venue right, it'll happen next year. And that's the big issue.
Righto. Well, my take out of the whole thing was not necessarily, I think that's brilliant. Anywhere we can grow the game's fantastic. What I loved, Gil, is the 18 clubs' ability to go and organise their own TV deal with overseas broadcasters. I think Star TV, we got Ricky Ponting, dust him off, and there's another revenue stream for the club. It's fantastic.
I heard you've been sooking up about that. So let's be clear. Port Adelaide didn't go and do their own broadcast deal, but they have. Our guys did that, but in terms of them packaging their deal together, it may look like that. And so, to be clear, James, they didn't do that, and it wouldn't have been the first time a club had sort of put a little bit of gravy on things for their benefit, and I think we all understand where it's at.
Gil, when you say if you find a venue, you'll play the game next year, it's not, I would have thought, something you could just naturally go and find in China, a venue that could play an AFL game. I mean, you're running out of time on this for next year, aren't you?
There's a venue there, but it's just expensive because the Shanghai venue is the right size, right dimensions, it's got everything. So it's got a running track around the outside. So it is very doable. We've had the turf experts up there.
Yep.
It's expensive. And then you do run an executional risk of laying the turf over. And so we've got to be satisfied that we can have the people on the ground who'll execute on it. So there is an option there that is doable. And then they're looking at what other alternatives are, whether they could be cheaper or with less risk.
Okay. Commission meeting on Tuesday, Gil. Few issues, obviously, will be played out. The replay of the grand final, I believe, is one that is going to be discussed. Do you expect an answer to come out of that particular meeting on that, the removal or potential removal of the replay component to the grand final?
I reckon there'll be a decision, yeah. I'm not going to telegraph. Well, I actually don't know where it'll go, so I don't think you should assume either way, but there'll be a decision, yeah. I mean, clearly the one side of the debate is history, tradition, and we're really the only sport in the world, and there's something special and unique, and if it happens every 30 or 40 years or whatever it is, then it's something to preserve. There's also, you know, financial reasons you'd do it, and that money, whether it goes into the community or infrastructure or you know, there's a place where it could go. But on the other side, in a national competition, you know, a replay would be, in some people's minds, hugely challenging for non-Victorian teams to be able to, and would put them in a serious disadvantage if they had to back up.
But it's your view it should go. Is that fair?
I didn't say that, James.
No, but is that a fair statement I've just made?
No, I've said that I'm not going to comment on my view. They're the two sides of the debate. Look, what do you think?
I already know what the two sides are. I'd just like you to give us your opinion, which I think is that it should go.
What is your view?
I think it absolutely should go. I don't understand why home and away we put...
You're pretty powerful.
I don't understand home and away, Gil, why we put up with draws. We should have overtime just in round three if there's a draw. It's 2 points worthless to any club, and I love the whole overtime thing. I think it's great drama, and you know, we should do it every week.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. I don't think they're worthless, but I reckon that's a reasonable debate.
And just on that, before we move on to other topics, is that part of this conversation, the removal or potential removal of the replay to the grand final? Is it possible you're also having the conversation turned to home and away matches?
It's not on the agenda, no, but okay. I can see how you could draw that logic, but it's not on the agenda.
Okay. Look, Gil, there's so many things you will be discussing on Tuesday, that the CBA and the Women's League, and we'll touch on that in a moment. The Essendon issue, there's so many aspects of that too. It's been revived, so to speak, from the Nathan Box situation, but the compensation component to which the Essendon 34, in inverted commas, are going down the path of. There's going to be some really small amounts, there's going to be some larger amounts in Joe Watson's case and Dyson Heppel and maybe even Michael Hurley. So what involvement do you as an organisation have in what lies ahead on that front?
Well, it's ultimately a decision between the player, you know, discussions between the players, representatives and the footy club, but we are not divorced for that. We've got a level of oversight and visibility, and we'll play whatever role we need to play, whether it's, you know, at the behest of the player representatives or the Essendon footy club to help resolve this and get those agreements reached so everyone can move forward. And so we've got a level of visibility. We've been in some preliminary meetings and sort of know broadly where it's at. But as I said, ultimately it's a decision for the Essendon footy club and the players through their representatives. But we're sort of, you know, broadly got oversight and play whatever role we're asked.
Is it a $20 million plus exercise, this, when it's all said and done, Gil? And you know enough about the commercial landscape to know what this potentially could entail.
I don't know what the number is, Damien, but I've had, you know, these very large numbers speculated, and someone told me they're in the paper again today are wrong. It'll be, you know, I know they're not non-substantive, but they're, I think, manageable, and that's all I can really say.
Gil, women's footy, how confident are you that it's at a level and ready to go? I think the whole community is excited about seeing it, but I think they're thinking the Bulldogs-Melbourne game that we saw last year is the standard they're going to get. Of course, that was a collection of the best 44 players in Australia. Are you confident that it's ready to go next year at a standard that is good enough to get immediate attraction to the viewing audience?
It's a good question, BT. I mean, it is not, when you expand to eight teams, it's clearly not going to be at the same standard as the game we saw last year. But we are confident of the depth and the accelerated number of women, talented women coming to our game and coming through the junior ranks, that will be a standard that we are very happy with. So the logistics are, you know, there's a huge amount to do to set this up. I'm very proud of how much of our crew have done already. The request for proposals for all of the clubs are due, I think, April 29. My instinct is that the vast majority of all our clubs will be bidding for a licence. You know, the depth is an issue, but I think, you know, it's grown so strongly, we thought we'd probably be starting with six clubs. A year ago, people talked about four and then maybe six, and they're now confident, and that's come from the bottom up, saying they think we can start with eight. So I think that's where it'll end up.
We're not going to hold you up for much longer because we know how busy you are, but surely the CEO of the AFL can knock the NRL coming down here and playing their grand final on your ground on the head. You're not going to tolerate that, are you?
I'm not going to be drawn into it, James, other than to say I was interested to read it.
Well, don't just sit on the fence and give us...
I don't think I've sat on the fence there.
AW-style answers. We want you to actually square your shoulders and give us something. This is the rival code trying to come down into your city and
center,
play
Gil.
Their grand final on your ground. Surely, a man of your influence...
Do they actually want to do it? I haven't heard that.
Well, even if there's a suggestion of it, I'd expect you to get your one wood out, get the Pro V nice and high on the tee, and smash it out of the ballpark.
Listen, let me find out all the facts, and we may well go golfing after that.
You were about to be an NRL CEO a couple of years ago, Gil, so you'd know the plans they would have had in place for such a thing.
Well, if I was the NRL CEO, a Victorian polo playing football-loving guy coming to team, the one thing I wouldn't move is the grand final to Victoria.
All right, what's on for the rest of the day as we let you go? You're just drifting around, or what have we got?
You
I've got a wedding, James.
Very nice.
I hope it all goes ahead.
All right, well, make sure you...
the reception.
Make sure you get out on the dance floor later and do some of your very best work.
I'll be dominant.
All right, thanks for that, Gil.
Hey, JB, I just wanted to mention, yes, too, Essendon fans would be interested in this. Ronnie Kerwin passed away last night. He was the head of the Essendonians, much loved by all the players and administrators at the Essendon Football Clubs. They'll wear black armbands today, and that will be because of this great man, Ronnie Kerwin, who did so much for the Essendon Footy Club.
Well said, Bristle. We can't hold you back any longer.
No, I don't it when you set it up like
this. Ready to go.
I like to hide them.
For a good 45 minutes, so what do we got, please?
Well, look, it's come to my attention.
Yes.
How do you do this, Damon?
Yes.
It's come to my attention that over in the West, the big man, Aaron Sandilands, everyone knows that he punctured his lung last week, and it was terrible, and he was looking. In fact, he got out of hospital yesterday, I believe, the big fella over there, and while it's been reported as a punctured lung and perhaps a cracked rib or two, it's a little more significant than that. I'm told that it will be a 10 to 12, perhaps even a 10 to 13 week injury, because what's been reported is only about half of what has actually happened. And he's that sort of guy. You wouldn't want people, you know, taking pity on him. Yep. But he's actually had plates attached to four of his ribs. So very unusual. We'll get the doc, Rowan White, on in a minute to tell us how unusual that is. And the doctors were saying to his family that it was akin to a car accident type injury where you get crushed up against the steering wheel. So very significant. So plates attached to four of the ribs, and one of the ribs that was unrepairable was removed completely.
What?
So
it took a rib out.
Taken out completely.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, that's a bomb.
Removed the rib.
Draining of blood from the chest cavity, all of that thing that goes with a punctured lung. But so very, very significant. So removed a rib and plated four other ribs. How often have you heard of plated ribs, Spud?
Never.
Rare.
Never heard of it.
Normally they just heal naturally and there's nothing you can do for it.
How tough is he? He walked into the ambulance.
Yep.
This is...
I think Doc Ron White may be joining, listening to this online. Doc?
G'day, JB. How you going?
Have you heard what Brian just said?
Yeah, heard it. And I've got to say, in my experience, the only time I've heard about this sort of injury treated in this manner is motor vehicle accidents in big hospitals. So Aaron has been... boy, when we saw him walking to the ambulance, we had no idea how significant the injury was.
So, Rowan, what would cause the removal or the surgeon to want to remove a rib?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, BT. One is, of course, the rib cracks and forms a very sharp knife edge, which actually punctures the lung. Not only does it deflate the lung in doing so, but it caused a lot of bleeding. We understand that Aaron also had a tube put in to drain the blood and to reinflate the lung. Now, if that rib has its sharp edge that is continually rubbing against, then there's a very high incidence of that re-puncturing the lung, causing issues all over again. So there may be the need for that. Or if the rib is that badly smashed, comminuted, or what we call as a flail segment, that's another reason why the surgeon would have to remove that section of rib.
And that simply means it's broken in two places and there's a wobbly bit in the middle that they can't repair.
That's absolutely... Have you been reading Wikipedia? Have you?
I have. I looked it up.
How long will we be out, Rowan? How long will Sandilands miss?
Well, I've got to say, Spud, it's not only the issue about the ribs that have been repaired and plated, but it's also about the damage to the underlying lung and the lining of the lung that we call the pleura. That's what's bled. Now, just for the lung to settle down, this is a 4 to 6 week issue just for the lung repair. And the ribs, of course, because they're moving parts, you know, you're breathing continuously, the plates have to be put in to isolate and stop the ribs from moving to enhance the healing. And again, that'll be several weeks. I'd imagine this is a 2 to 3 month injury for Aaron to get back to footy.
And how rare is it that you plate ribs, Doc?
Only when they're multiple, badly comminuted. And usually, Brian, as we said earlier, you only see that in real significant trauma, such as motor vehicle accidents. So I'm unaware of any footballer that's had their ribs reduced in this manner to be plated.
So just moving on, and more generally speaking, I want to put this to you, Doc. Osteitis pubis has completely disappeared. Why do we never hear of that anymore? Has the game changed? And secondly, calf injuries have emerged as the real issue for clubs.
Well, it's probably because we're learning more from the history of these sort of complaints, Brian. I mean, the AFL doctors carry a very good history and the record of these sort of injuries. And we know now, and I know how you know, you're right up with the sports physiologists and the sports scientists, and these are the blokes who actually analyse all this stuff and looking at the training methodologies and avoid those sort of things that would cause osteitis pubis, cross-legged type injuries that, you know, are common in soccer and so on, and calf injuries. Well, again, it's just through education and monitoring these things and training the boys in the manner to which they need to be trained.
Doc, you sound a bit under the weather, mate. Are you okay?
Yeah, mate, I'm in the Albert Park Infirmary. I'm self-medicating, Spud. You're right, I'm no good at the moment. I've come out of my deathbed to speak to you, blokes.
Okay. Well, we appreciate it, Doc. Thank you very much for that.
Pleasure, JB.
Yeah,
rib bristle.
Well done, yes,
that's a legitimate one, Brian. Yep.
No, that's good. So, osteitis pubis disappeared. Calf injuries have emerged. By the way, of the injuries so far, 11 are calves, 10%, that is, of all injuries, 22 are hamstrings. So it is going off in a different direction to what we're used to seeing.
You've taken a real medical angle.
Well,
Bristle,
I've got a few medical informants that ring me. And
sports science aren't too happy with you at the moment.
Well, I want to go again on the sports scientists.
Happy to go head to head.
Because I'm even
air.
More convinced now that sports scientists have just about ruined our game.
I didn't think it was possible for Spud to get more bits of paper into this very tiny room, but you've actually achieved it, Spud. What is all this stuff in front of you?
Newspaper clippings and handwritten notes.
Well, I've got a newspaper clipping from Wednesday, April 13.
Do you check every clipping, do you?
No, I do, because the great Tony Lockett went to the AFL Hall of Fame to induct Robert Harvey's a legend.
He was coming on with us.
And he did see my calls a few times and ignored them.
Yeah.
He did. He did say one thing Saturday night. You're consistent. Every 5 minutes for an hour. So but anyway,
there's no going to be no follow up on that. We're not going to get him.
Well, we might. But on the back of this article, Brian, we won't probably see him again, because he was outstanding last Saturday night. Drove down at 11 o'clock, got to the function at 7:30.
Yeah.
I organised a few drinks in the River Room for a Triple Brownlow medalist Ian Stewart, who recruited him, Stuart Trott, a couple of his football mates.
So like elite sort of...
No, and a couple of current players, just to have
others.
A couple of crown
lovers. You and Louis.
Any of the fans in there with him?
Louis.
There was Peter Summers, the president, Matty Finnis, and Molly Meldrum.
Yep, great.
So there was a few people... Two crown lagers he had, and then came into the room at 8:30, sat next to Anita, my wife, and Kane Taylor, because I knew that you guys would be all over it, so I made sure that I wasn't sitting next to him.
I've got news on that night. But
anyway, Lowy was there on the hill, and Harves was behind. Then for the next 2 hours, Plugger got inundated with photos, and you can
get... They swarmed around the table in the main palladium.
And so you can get on... at Triple M Footy, is that right? To have a look at some of the photos. Then after he spoke magnificently well for 10 minutes about Robert Harvey, then sat down, got a photo with Robert Harvey.
Still inside the main room?
Still inside the main room.
Yep.
Then had a photo with the other living six Brownlow medalists. Verdon Howell, Neil Roberts, Ian Stewart, Ross Smith, Tony Lockett, Robert Harvey, and Brian Gleeson.
And signing every autograph in between.
So the seven guys stood up, got a photo. One person in the crowd bid for it. It brought 15,000.
Wow.
Five to charity, 10 to the club. So Plugger put himself out there. When they found out Tony Lockett was coming, the tickets were $350. Then when they found out he was coming, the tickets went up to 820 people, Brian, at $275 a head. So all of a sudden, the function on the back of Lockett...
500, yep.
So what's your point?
My point is, then at 11:30, he had a room at Crown Metropole. We said, let's go down for a drink. He said, I haven't had any since 8 o'clock. What are you doing? He said, I'm driving home. I said, be buggered you are. We're having a few drinks. He said, no, I'm going back to drench the cattle. Well done, mate. He texts me 8:30.
And that's drench the cattle, not...
So what's your point?
My point is...
What is your point?
Scotty Gillen, whatever his name is, in the Herald Sun... wrote an article 5 days later about Plugger or the Green Hermit, apparently in the Green Room, so it was the River Room. You're wrong there, Scotty. Then, after his 10-minute talking of Robert Harvey, went back into the Green Room, so like some recluse, Scotty. Get off your fat ass and ring someone up, Scott. You're going to write a story like that, which is absolute crap...
So your point is he was in the main room.
He doesn't write crap.
So you're saying he was in the main room the whole time. Is that what you're trying to say?
Other than the first hour. So Scotty Gullen has talked about... Then he went back in as a recluse. He's something like the Loch Ness Monster. Someone can't see
him. Will this scare him off, Plugger?
I don't think he'll come back, Brian, and nor should he. Why would he bother coming down and copping crap like that?
Can't you get a bit tougher skin than...
But isn't this guy one of the legends of our game?
Yeah, but...
Isn't he?
Yeah, but he's...
But shouldn't he be retreated? And all right, I'm not going to get defensive, because I'd take a bullet for him. I won't take one for you, Gullen.
I think there's another reason why we mightn't see him again.
Why?
Because every time he comes down, Spud, you give him the greatest drying of all time. It's my understanding that you were going and finding current players like David Armitage and going, stick with me, Armour. Yeah. I can get you to meet the great player. Stay with me, Armour. Yep. Just come walking with me.
I heard Armitage.
Apparently, he was marching them in one every 5 minutes.
That's it.
Maybe a couple of times.
Say Rossi. Come with me. I'll wander in and you can meet...
No one knows who you are. Anyway, we'll move on.
We'll move on quickly.
We will move on quickly, Spud, to the Melton Trots. Now, the Melton Trots, Damo, are they on tonight?
They usually are.
Are you hearing something about Spud at the Melton Trots?
Well, what I have got for you, BT, is that that sport itself, the harness racing sport itself, is in all sorts of strife. It has got so many problems, it's not funny. It used to be a great sport, and it still is a great sport, but people are dropping off it. But I would have thought it might have had enough problems dealing with its own problems without introducing
another problem.
Something to it. Oh, which I think you're about to
tonight at the Melton Trots at about 8:20. We all know that there's a new board been elected.
Well, this is what I'm getting to.
Of the Melton Trots.
No, the harness racing, board.
Yep. And Spud, our man is Spud, on the board.
Introduced to the board. Of the harness racing bodies.
Right.
What are you
it's
laughing at?
It's got enough
at?
Problems
they'll,
without you joining it.
Be what are you laughing at, JB?
Over the shot.
Look at Jim.
What's wrong with you?
He's on the board. Have you got any idea about governance?
Your sister drove Vandercross 30 years ago.
Vanderport.
Vandercross.
You want to belt everyone that says anything against you. You poor old Scotty Goers.
They're putting me through a director's course, JB.
I hope so.
Dale Monteith, as we know, he's the chairman, and Martin Bakula, the sports minister.
Anyway.
She went to my house and wanted me to go on. So how could I say no?
What's the pillar you're standing on?
No more stand starts or no more handicaps? What are you going to do?
I think I'm here for relationship building and a bit of media.
Tonight, JB, at 8:20, which is only 10 minutes before the main race is about to get underway, it come to our area there, Damo, that Spud, the new board member, will be speaking on behalf of the entire new
industry.
Australia-wide. Spud will be making a harness racing speech to the world about his knowledge on harness racing.
This is what I'm going to do to fix this sport.
And the thing
is... Don't make light of this, guys.
He's on at 8:20. The main race is on 8:30. The word is they're going to delay the 8:30 race.
Come on, Spud.
I've got to do the right thing for harness racing. They're down a little bit. It's a great sport. We're going to get it back, including Dale Monteith as the chairman, by the way. So there's a few.
You're going to rip out a couple of paleface Adios?
A couple of Chevaliers.
Pure
Village Kids.
Pure Steel.
My sister Ram was the first girl to break the 2-minute barrier.
Norm's daughter.
Second in an Inter-Dominion to Village Kid. Paleface Adios won 107 races, actually.
There he is. He's given us a little taste.
Guys, mate.
Murray's Idol, 27 in a row.
What is your opening line at addressing the nation on harness racing?
I'm happy to be a part of this beautiful sport, Brian. We're all here, so that's what we're doing. But can I just get one off my chest? I can't after that. I'm flat. But anyway, it's looking forward to it. There's a guy by the name, Brian, you took the guy out of under your wing, Seb Costello.
Yep.
Now, at the...
Very good operator, Seb.
You got him from the dead station. He's over here. He's doing a good job.
There's others claiming
JB.
We've nailed
JB. Very good job. He's on the hot breakfast and he's doing 9 news.
From my point of view, Seb himself thinks he's doing a good job as well.
All right.
If he was an icy pole, he'd lick himself to death at the moment.
Love bites.
Now, Seb, it started last week. He did a really good news. So Chomper, Tony Jones.
Yeah, Chompers.
Throws to Seb at this park in the northern suburbs.
And he was doing a walk and talk.
Yeah, and found the camera. But what he had on, Brian, was a gridiron helmet. Give me a spell with a suit. Now, this guy in D grade has gone over to the... got a scholarship.
It's a very good story.
Great story.
He broke it.
You know what? It's a good story. Because we will be the judge of it. Not some wanker wearing a gridiron helmet. Have a listen to what he said.
Oh, come on, Spud.
Luke Darcy asked him a question the next morning about... this story.
This is unfair.
Good story on a young boy who's got a college scholarship to one of the top 10 schools over there. said decides to don the helmet. Don the pickup.
What are we talking about? What is that? A gridiron helmet?
It is a gridiron helmet and a ball, Seb. And mate, if you're going to do that, follow through and at least kick the ball, which you didn't do. Are you happy with yourself or not?
Oh, well, mate, no, it's a great story.
Okay. Hey, Seb. Seb, we'll be the judge, mate, whether it's a great story. Not you. The viewers, the listeners. You have got love bites in the mirror, my friend, and you're doing a great job. But
he
just
he is doing a great job.
He is.
Too good, though.
Oh.
He's got love bites in the mirror. He drinks his own bar for at the moment.
Rising star of the Capers,
but I saw him walk out of the hot breakfast last week.
Yes.
I was over at the paper shop. Seriously, he walked across the road. Have a look at me. Oh, his head nearly wobbled off. Oh, the tram stopped and his head was wobbling. Gee whiz, Seb, just bring it back a bit.
The team assembled have just been a little edgy and a little sort of not sure. Bristle and Spud and Damo. And speaking about edgy and not sure, I understand there was a bit of a confrontation out the back, Bristle. Frosty sort of cold front type sort of discussion between two of the great forwards of the modern era. I speak of Matty Lord, Lloyd, our man Lordo. And, of course, the great Wayne Carey, who have had an interesting week. And Duck wanders in now. Welcome, Duck.
G'day, boys. G'day, listeners. How are we?
What happened out the back there?
Oh, no. Well, obviously, on Talking Footy last Monday night, we do a segment called The Blowtorch. And Lloydie had been fairly vocal about Trent Cotchin and his captaincy and also about young Jesse Hogan. And I just basically the point I was trying to make with Lloydie, and he was very strong on Jesse, who has only played the one full season, played a couple of bad, not bad games, I guess had one really,
don't
really poor game.
Don't give us the
game.
History, Duck. Give us the
well,
current,
I'm giving you the I'm giving you the history, so people that don't know, BT. Right. And basically I said that even the greats, like Matthew Lloyd, Hall of Famer, 900-plus goals, have periods in their career, BT, where they struggle. So to sit on our pedestal, and this is what we do as ex-players sometimes, very easy on this side of the fence to be overcritical, especially of young players like Hogan. So I just said to Lloydie, remember when you had a bit of a form slump in your career and you needed help. So just remember that when you're being critical on those young kids.
How willing did it get outside of you?
Well, it'd be fair to say it wasn't willing at all, BT. It was a discussion. I said, Lloydie, I hope you understand where I was coming from. On the flip side of that, I love the fact that Matthew Lloyd has strong opinions about things, and that's why we love the way he goes about his business.
Bend over style.
Yeah. So it was, and Lloydie and I have been, been friends or
are you still
good acquaintances.
Are you still friends?
Yes.
Or has it gone back to acquaintances?
No. We're both sponsored by Mercedes-Benz Berwick, and if you want a good car, get out to Mercedes-Benz Berwick. Obviously, Craig Howard.
That's a crowbar and gristle.
So we've got lunch together on Friday, actually. So it was So we get along very well.
So you're not sponsored by a Toyota then?
Mercedes-Benz Berwick's just a little bit above Toyota.
You've used the term.
Drive a Holden, but anyway.
We are actually sponsored by Fiat Ducato, by the way, which is the most powerful front-wheel drive van in its class, bud.
But, Duck, where's this comment about autumn leaves come from?
Oh, look, that was a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. When Lloydie's form slump at the time, he was going to ground a lot, so I just said he was a bit like autumn leaves, on the ground all the time.
Okay. You take that one well?
Your man, Damo, said he didn't take it well.
I asked him then,
and he said he's fine with it. And if Lloydie had a real problem with it, he would have called me. And if I thought I'd overstepped the mark too far, I would have called
him. He's a star, Lloydie.
Duck, have you heard of San Simeon?
No.
Because that's who Spud's going to be talking about at the harness races tonight.
That's it.
It's Spud's a great pacer
brand new
from
WA.
Go there, Duck.
Actually, I've got a question for you, Spud. Where are you at right at the minute? You've got a young man that's just signed a 4-year deal, Josh Bruce. He's the number one man at St Kilda now. He's taken over Nick Riewoldt. So it's a big moment. And you're pinging grapes at his press conference from behind. So he's got to duck and weave grapes while he's in one of his most important press conferences of all time. Let's have a listen to this.
You know, I definitely think that finals are possible and potentially a flag. We'll just see how we go. But Spud for...
Spud?
Yeah, it's just great to see Spud. So.
Spud.
Yeah.
It's a young man...
Serious stuff.
Signing a four-year deal at a great club, and you're piffing grapes at him.
JB, football clubs to me have become far too sterile. You just got to loosen the joint up. Yeah. Seriously, it's like clocking on, clocking off. What, you're not allowed to laugh and have a few pranks at a footy club anymore?
The sponsor with the backdrop, and they're just getting struck by grapes.
What if someone
it took a lot of airtime. It went on every news channel. We've just played it again.
No, the story went on the channel. The fact that he signed a four-year deal, that was the reason the cameras were there.
Well, it's not about him. It's about me. So that's what it's about.
Right. So you were hoping the cameras would turn onto you?
Well, not really, but imagine going down to Richmond or Collingwood at the moment. Geez, they'd be about as funny as a kick in the pills. Loosen up, football clubs. You're allowed to enjoy yourself, aren't you, Duck?
Yes.
Go,
yes,
we clock in, clock off.
Hey, Spud, Duck, tell us about Richmond. You were there last night. You got caught on the same flight home. Understand we had about a 2 or 3 hour delay.
Yep.
But were they as bad in person as they looked on the telly?
Oh, look, I think West Coast were very good early, very, very good in the way they pressed up and put them under pressure. So they were at their absolute best. But Richmond's biggest problem, and you know, I had a bit of a chat after the game and listened to Damien Hardwick's press conference, and biggest problem was just the overuse of the handball and giving that forward handball to stationary targets that then put them under more pressure than the guy that had the ball in the first place, who should have either kicked it or picked a better option, simple as that. So their decision making and their execution was terrible, and West Coast were at their best, and they've got a little bit of work to do, the Tigers, obviously.
Are they capable of turning this around? I know it's only four games in, but...
Well, the last 3 years will tell you that they're capable of turning it around. They've done it. They've finished 5th, 8th and 5th in the last 3 years, so they've got on runs. Are they capable of doing that again? Well, I think they are. They're in a bad way at the moment, and Dennis Pagan used to say, we used to use the word, you can't go to Puckle Street and buy a jar of confidence. It's the same with Richmond. You know, they're down on confidence. And I reckon this loss that they had to Collingwood here a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, they had the game in the bag. And they actually played all right last week, BT.
Are they down on game style, game tactics?
Well, I just think West Coast last night, I thought what they wanted to try to do was take the game on with handball, but then it was just overuse, and West Coast pressure was just far too good. So, they really got... And then I guess the snowball effect to that was then they lose confidence, and then they stop going for that, and they're kicking down the line. And West Coast were brilliant last night. We're looking at last year's grand finalist, and more than likely... They'll at least get there again.
That was the big thing for me, as you said, the handball forward. Now, as we know, against the Western Bulldogs and Hawthorn, West Coast and Adelaide, they've got a fronting defence. So they're actually coming at the guy with the ball. So if you kick the ball and mark it, they can man the mark. But when you loop that ball up over the top and you're stationary and facing away from goal, they turned around, they had nothing to go. So they obviously changed their plan. But then they went long down the line where McGovern said, OK, bring it on.
Yeah.
7 intercept marks later, they were done.
Well,
so
Hardwick said, Spud, last night, like, it's not a plan. This style of play, he said, has frustrated him, and that overuse with that handball has frustrated him all year, this year. So it's just something, they're not training to do that. Yeah. It's just something that the players are getting themselves into situations and using the wrong option for whatever reason. So that's just something they'll work on hard on the track and... They've got a long break, so they've got the ability to get together today. I hope the players are getting together today and, you know, sit around, and whether it's a couple of lemonades or just a couple of quiet beers together, I think it's really important because they do have the extra break. So
they play next Sunday night
at
7 o'clock, which now becomes a really big game. Obviously, the next day is Anzac Day, so that's a huge clash.
At Triple M Footy?
At Triple M Footy is the Twitter handle. Jim, they love the Spud harness racing board story. Jeff Miles is giving you some advice. Ash Harvey, Gordy Brown, a long-time PAC member.
What's their advice?
I think it's going to go something like this.
This is what sums it up.
Go on.
BT, Trent Conhetti, at Trent Conhetti. Spud, at $1 to drop his under the pump joke of the Melton Trots tonight.
That's
come through quite a lot, Spud.
Come on, how's he going to go about it, Bristol? What's your thoughts?
Give me a break.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I am your new board member, and tonight I speak on behalf of the board, but not just the board, everyone involved in harness racing around the country. I would like to announce that I will be running this this community and sport for the next 5 years. I am Danny Frawley, and I am never wrong. And while I'm elected to a board, and there are six of us,
he's starting to warm up.
Make no mistake, the other five won't be getting a look in at all, because I am smart and I'm crazy. And then the race is off. San Sinium gets out of the gates. Nice. Up around the first fairlong. Oh, Spud.
Give us you're a president of a club.
I know, Spud.
Give me some sale.
What's your platform? What was your platform to get on?
My platform?
Yeah.
Building relationships and helping Adam Hamilton and getting
he doesn't need any help. He's actually kept it alive.
Yeah, free to wear. Get coverage.
You're linking yourself straight away with the top man.
Well, he's the reason it's still vibrant.
Why wouldn't you go to the top, Adam Hamilton? And we have.
I would have thought the stalls need repairing and the muck out of the.
No, that's fine. But we've got 180 acres out there, hectares, Brian, in Melton, right in the middle of the city.
And it's like duck's land. Nothing grows on it.
BT,
just one thing
you
might do, though. It's just one thing.
One thing.
As we go to the break.
We'll get the main races, the Hunter Cup, the Miracle Mile, the Victoria Cup, and the Trotters Championship on free-to-air with Adam Hamilton as the compere, and just a little bit of free-to-air Australia-wide. We need that, Warrior. That'll be something we're working pretty hard on, Brian. Yeah.
So has Adam got Spud onto the board because he thinks he's got someone
that
he can
control?
No,
not at all.
won't be threatened by?
No.
And perhaps look into the juicing up there, Spud, there as well as
the integrity issues
several of your
will be looked after. Brett Clothier from the AFL who's on the board as well.
Brett Clothier.
So he's there to look after that charter.
Nice.
So there you go. All right.
Been a big day.
Cut some slack.
Been a big day. First of all, Trent Cotchin talking about throwing Dimmer under the bus. People throwing Dimmer under the bus. Then we spoke to Gil McLaughlin and had some nice intel from him about what's going on in China, among other things. Then a bomb from Bristle about Aaron Sandilands having a rib removed and plates on four more.
Big story.
A big story. TripleM.com.au if you want to hear any of what's going on in a massive Saturday rub. Get stuck into that, the podcast, of course. For Coates Hire, you're listening to the Footy Preview. Need gear in a hurry? Call Coates Hire 13 15 52 or coateshire.com.au. Full team next. Komet and the guys will help you get through this big game between Essendon and Geelong. Bristle, nice to see you.
Yep.
What are you doing? You're off to do...
I'm going to have a haircut.
Yes.
Down at the Y Salon, which is my man down there,
right.
Nick.
And then the Moustaka.
Can you do something without actually plugging something?
What about the Moustaka, Brian?
Oh, I'm going to go down there and he's going to trim the Moustaka up.
Good. Enjoy that.
The eyebrows
and then the game
like
tonight
duck.
You're doing?
Yes, Bulldogs Carlton tonight. Oh, looking
enjoy
forward
that,
to it.
Brian. No, for McDonald's. Get
Brian.
A fan feed box today. Triple M Rocks Football.
Shut up. The footy's on Triple M.
Triple M Rocks Football.